books to life. Vision without sight.
Blood Roots, an Andy Carmichael case, a paranormal thriller. Written, dramatised and produced by Be Here. Skilly knocked on the door and went in. Carl looked up from behind his desk.
I need a pair of binoculars to see him all the way over there,
thought Skilly, and a wry smile crossed his face.
What are you smiling at?
Nothing, boss. She's on the move again.
Okay, good. She doesn't know that you tagged her yet, then. That's great.
You know I wasn't happy about that, don't you? She was one of us. Why do we need to keep a track on her? It doesn't seem right, and asking me to do it was even worse.
We both knew she would hug you. She always does. You were best placed.
I know. But it still doesn't feel right. She's bound to find the microfilm tracker on her neck at some point. And when she does, she'll know it was me, and that's just not right. It's like a betrayal.
Well, she won't find it, will she? It's our latest tech. You know it's the same as her skin, and so thin she can't feel it. Well, for God's sake, Skilly, it won't even come off in the shower for the next few weeks, will it? How can she ever find it?
This is Andy we are talking about, boss, not some foreign agent without an ounce of nous. She'll find it, and when she does, I'm blaming you. I don't even understand why we need to know where she is.
All I need to know is that you'll do it. Do I make myself clear?
Yes, boss.
Good. Now, what else do we know?
At the minute, nothing else. We've reached out to the Americans, but they're not saying anything. Forensics hasn't come up with anything we can use. We are running the card using the pub through the system to see if we can find a match anywhere else and perhaps narrow in on who has it. Nothing back from the checks on the family that could lead to any connection. A bunch of nothing.
Right, okay. What about assets? Properties? Any trace on that?
We know that one of Sol's companies owns a manor house up in Yorkshire just outside Harrogate. That's the only one that sticks out. The rest are offices in major cities and we've already checked them out. Corporate business spaces, no reports, nothing unusual. Nothing. We're checking the property up in Harrogate now, digging around. If you come up with anything, I'll let you know.
Right, that's it then. Back to it.
Carl waved his hand, dismissing him. Skilly turned, closed the door behind him and looked back at it. What happened to Carl? He wondered. He had always been conceited and self-assured, but of late he seemed to make an extra effort. Maybe it was an age thing. What did he care? Just two more months and he was out. God, he couldn't wait. It wasn't the same now. When they had all been on active duty in Europe, infiltrating, fighting, scheming and planning, they'd been a team. Each of them couldn't do without the other. They were family, closer than family, and good at what they did. The political landscape had changed, though, and the skills they had all lived and breathed were no longer needed at any level. It all turned to espionage from afar, watching data, using the web, creating misinformation. It was interesting, but not the same as having your face in the dirt, improvising with whatever you had to hand, and always wondering if you would take a bullet. God, he missed it. Carl had been different then, a leader. The whole unit looked up to him. Then the incident with Andy occurred, and everything changed. Skilly sat and mulled over what he remembered. Skilly, Jules, and Graham sat at a table on the pavement outside the cafe. Each of them had a glass of beer and were making a good fist of seeming to enjoy themselves. They had eyes on their colleagues at each end of the street and were watching the building on the opposite side of the road. Andy and Carl had entered arm in arm about 2 hours ago to attend a party being held by a major arms dealing faction associated with the Kosovans. The instructions to everyone had been not to intervene till after 2 hours. If no contact was made, they were to go in. That was now 5 minutes away, and it was time to move. They had spent the days before understanding the layout and access points of the buildings just for this scenario. Jules stood up and stretched, giving the signal to their colleagues at both ends of the street. She made a lurch forward, knocking the table and causing a fuss. Graham and Skilly stood and each got hold of an arm, offering apologies to the owner of the cafe who came to see the ruckus. Pulling her away from the establishment, they staggered into the centre of the road before being able to stabilise the drunken woman. The commotion distracted the two men that had been trying to keep out of sight at the building where the party was being held, and they stepped forward to see what was happening. This was the excuse they needed. The team came in from the corners of the street. Quickly and efficiently they were taken out and replaced with members of the team. Each wore the same attire as the guards and blended back in. The whole thing was over in seconds, and Jules and the others continued their noisy crossing of the road. By now, the clientele of the cafe had gone back to their food and drink and were ignoring the group. They all sidled inside the building and ensured that their weapons were primed and within easy reach. Rounding the corner to the party, they walked in, as if expected, and made their way to mingle with the guests. They circled the room, but saw no sign of Andy and Carl. There was one door on the left-hand side, where two further suited men were watching the crowd. Jules signalled and moved towards them. The others moved sideways and round, approaching from either end. Jules reached the men and leant in as if to talk to them over the noise. She quickly stuck them in the side of the neck with a dart-like instrument. Each of them slumped, but were held up by Skilly and Graham. No one seemed to notice. Not waiting any longer, they charged through the door, weapons drawn, and all hell broke loose, and each rolled, firing at people gathered round a woman tied to a chair, comatose. Blood dripping from legs, arms and face, clothes ripped off, slumped forward, and hardly breathing. It was Andy. Despite heavy fire from semi-automatic weapons, the team took out everyone in the room. Carl dropped to the floor, pulling someone down with him, and stayed there. Jules, Skilly and Graham took out the last of the men and rushed to collect Andy from the chair and pick up Carl. But he got up and ran. Screams and complete commotion erupted in the main party room. People were running in all directions. Carl barreled into the room and headed around the corner and out. Jules looked up at Skilly and Graham, and they made for the window at the end of the room, the one they knew led onto the alley behind the building, and from there to the vehicle waiting at the end of the road. They piled in the vehicle and were off. 10 minutes later, they changed vehicles, and 40 minutes after that, they were at the safe house. Andy was still unconscious. They had lost Carl in the melee at the party. She was in a bad way, and whilst the external injuries were superficial, it was clear they had drugged her. Until Carl got to them, it was impossible to know what that was, and therefore prudent to do nothing. Carl did not turn up that night. Andy slipped in and out of consciousness, but by the morning was gaining some coherence. She told them that things had turned quickly. Carl had given her up as a spy and beaten her into semi-consciousness, helping them tie her to the chair and administer the drugs. She passed out again. Jules and the others looked at each other and then at Andy. It was Jules that spoke.
"I will kill him."
And they all knew who she meant. The rest of that day, Andy swayed in and out of consciousness, and they all waited. They couldn't move till they had heard from Carl. He came through the door just after dark. Andy was still semi-conscious. Carl looked across at her and walked toward her. Jules stood and, with a fury that would have surprised anyone, attacked him. Within seconds, she had unleashed a flurry of kicks and punches that had broken his arm, brought him to his knees, and had him heading for the floor. She got her arm around his neck and was focused on squeezing the life from him.
"Stop! Stop!"
Andy gurgled. Jules lifted her head and looked across. Carl's face was turning a bright red, and he was struggling with no success to loosen Andy's grip. The others moved in, and between them managed to pull Jules away from Carl. He dropped to the floor, gagging.
Stop!
Andy croaked, and then lapsed into unconsciousness again. Jules stepped away, planted a roundhouse kick to Carl's head, and he passed out. Carl regained consciousness 10 minutes later, and Skilly quizzed him about the drugs. He told them what was used, and Graham left the room and made a call for an extraction. Jules did not speak. It was clear she was quivering with rage and wanting to finish the job she had started. Within half an hour, the extraction team arrived, and they were all loaded into a vehicle and taken where they were airlifted back to the UK. It was 3 days later when they were all called for a debrief. Andy had improved and was walking. Jules had not left her side. Carl's arm was put up in a splint, and the rest had had their minor injuries patched up. They were spoken to one by one, and each gave their recollection of the events. The Foreign Secretary gathered them all in a room and gave a speech.
Before we all leave this room, I want you to understand something. Each of you had orders. Some of those orders were shared and some were not. It's your job as agents of the Crown to do what you must do. I believe that is exactly what has happened here. The sanctity of the British Secret Service comes first, over and above lives. The need for information and not compromising long-standing missions is paramount. Sometimes things that are, should we say, unsavoury must occur. And you, each of you, must know that. We will not speak of this incident again.
Jules stood.
No, we won't. And I won't ever need to. I resign.
Andy stood.
And I resign with her.
Skilly was next. He got up and just left the room without saying a word. The incident was closed and never spoken of again. The shape of the team changed, the trust broken and gone forever.